Hi, this is Dan Branch, Chairman of the House Higher Education Committee, and I'm happy to introduce this week's TribCast. I think with a little support and a lot of hard work, it might become a Tier 1 podcast someday. Of course, that depends on your host. Fresh from his week stalking folk singers in the Caribbean, here he is, the rising star of higher ed lyricism, your host, Vandy's finest, Reeve Hamilton.
Thank you, Representative Branch. This is reporter Reeve Hamilton here with the TribCast for the final week of February. Joining me is CEO and Editor-in-Chief Evan Smith.
Reeve, I knew that that cruise was going to follow you around like toilet paper on your shoe. It has been weeks since you've been back, and every week, you are mocked every week. Well, all 1 week of it, or I guess whatever it is, but you're mocked for this
thing. He's been mocked for a week.
He's mocked for a week.
Well, I mean, people can't control their jealousy. I understand that. Executive Editor Ross Ramsey is also here.
Howdy.
Hey. And Jim Henson from the UT Politics Project.
Speaking of mocked.
That would be the Texas Politics Project. Thanks, Reeve. It's good to be here.
It's okay. Yeah. You think he can't get that right? Wait till he tells you the email address for the comments at the end. He'll get that wrong also.
One of these times we have you on, I'll get it right.
We've never gotten a comment, have we? Nobody knows the address.
Well, we will actually, starting this week, after we go through the various polls that we've rolled out with the help of the UT Politics on Texas project that Jim runs, we will be going into the mailbag.
He's such a little weasel, isn't he?
We're going. The higher-ups here at the Tribune have instructed me that we must solicit queries from the populace.
Viewer mail.
It's Vox Populi. It's like that scene in Network when everything goes off the rails.
Matt M. from Must Read Texas writes.
Right. So we'll do that finally, but let's get started with the polls this week, the UTTT poll, which looks like the big winner so far is not a Texan at all, but is Rick Santorum. Is that fair to say? Jim, it's your poll.
Well, it's I
see how he disowned it right there.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's not the first time he's done that. Well, I mean, it's been the headline. I mean, he's the big winner in terms of, you know, being so far ahead of all the other competitors. He benefited from great timing. I mean, I'm not saying it's all completely ephemeral, but we were in the field the 8th through the 15th of February. This was right at the moment that Santorum was climbing. But before he was enough of a front runner that people had mobilized against him, started the negative attacks, and he hadn't had time to
at that moment
to really
when you're rising, and they haven't started shooting.
Right, he hadn't really started screwing up yet. Yeah, they were waiting for him to just come over the hill before they could start, you know, cranking the guns at him.
The whites of his sweater vest.
But yeah, I mean, it's hard not to look at that. I mean, I think in a more diffuse way, it's not just Rick Santorum; it's the conservative faction of the Republican Party in Texas that is just sending message after message after message that they're having none of Mitt Romney.
Well, and they're also not following the governor's lead. He endorsed Gingrich.
Right.
Somebody should remind him of that. I mean, I realize that as we sit here, he's preparing to spin for Gingrich in the spin room at the debate in Arizona. But the fact is, Governor hadn't mentioned Gingrich hardly at all since he endorsed him.
Yeah, he did his endorsement and, you know, bye-bye. Well, so Gingrich is nominally in second place in this thing. It was Santorum 45, Gingrich 18, Romney 16.
Which I think that the
Ron Paul.
Gingrich 14. Being ahead of Romney is as much evidence of what Jim is talking about as anything. And really, there are two ways to perceive this poll, Ross. One is that Santorum is winning. The other is what was going to be the case all along, which is Romney's losing. And it was regardless of who the person winning was going to be, Romney was going to be losing.
Another way to put it in Texas is that the race in Texas is not for the not Romney. The race in Texas is for who is the conservative. And, you know, Texas was, you know, this isn't completely unexpected in Texas. 4 years ago, right. Mike Huckabee got 38% after he was out of the race in Texas. They didn't like McCain that year. The conservatives are really significant and innervated part of the Republican Party.
Well, and I think there's two, and it's two cycles in a row. Sorry, there's two cycles in a row in which, you know, the Republican Party in Texas has been on a different page than the national party, right? That
well,
is.
Well, but that's because most of the people who have been on the on whatever page with Texas, they had a Texan candidate. I mean, right? I mean, you know, how many we talked about this at one point earlier in the year that there are a number of 7 out of 9 of the last elections have had a Texan on the ballot. Right.
But also, if you look back last year, I mean, I guess the point I was trying to make more specifically is that last year there was a real spread in the financials among the Republican GOP candidates, and there was never a no, but they didn't settle on anybody. right. ultimately.
Is there some, are Texans more swayed by public opinion than other places? Are we more volatile than the rest of the country? I mean, Rick Santorum's jump in this poll from our October poll is meteoric. It's from like 1% to whatever percent it is.
45.
Yeah. Well, we happened to land the October poll in the middle of the Herman Cain surge. Remember Herman Cain? You know, back
Herman Cain was nominally ahead of Perry.
Well, right. It was right 20. Yeah. It was right. Herman Cain 27, Perry 26, everybody else behind. Still not Romney, by the way. You know, so the not Romney number went 27 plus 29. I mean, you know, we're at about half the voters were sort of not Romneys then. Now they've sort of settled, at least for this moment, on Santorum. I bet he's wishing that today really was the first day of early voting for the Super Tuesday Texas primary.
Yeah, I mean, we've been talking about that, although that's, you know, that alternate universe, I mean, where, you know, Spock has a beard and, you know, Santorum is the presidential candidate.
So now we know about Jim Henson.
is kind of weird. I mean, if the primary had been set here, it probably wouldn't look just like this. Right. In other words, right. If we hadn't had all the disruption in the primary and everybody knew Texas was coming up March 6th, you know, it would affect the fundamentals.
It's like having Harlan Ellison for a pollster.
Look, the thing is, speaking of timing and change, mm-hmm. you're in the field February 8th to February 15th. We come out with this poll on Monday. Well, what's happened over the last 96 hours, including a period of time post-Monday, we sit here Tuesday afternoon recording this, is that Santorum is not having a very good time of it. Romney is showing signs of life in Michigan. Romney is, we think, ahead.
Because he loves their cars and their trees.
And the size of their trees and lakes, all the lakes, not just the big lakes, but the little lakes. And he's doing well in Arizona. I mean, look, it could still be the case that Romney wins Michigan, pulls a victory from the jaws of defeat. He could win Arizona, and the dynamic of this race shifts away from Santorum right. momentarily. So in some ways, the finding that Santorum is ahead in Texas could be behind the news in about a week, and who knows what the effect would be at that point.
And well, of course, now Romney is also enjoying his Strauss bump.
Well, and this goes back to your question. Yes, the Strauss.
We can get to that after. I don't want to touch to my question.
I don't want
to
Strauss. I don't.
I'll have Ross touch
the Strauss bump. Really,
you just made it dirty. See what happened? Unbelievable.
You're getting back to my question.
Yeah,
which I don't,
you know,
remember.
About how volatile it is, and that's kind of thing. You know, that's ultimately, you know, Evan's point that, you know, these things have been shifting, and Ross had made it as well. I mean, that, you know, this thing is still churning quite a bit, and so, you know, Rick Santorum at 45 week and a half ago doesn't mean Rick Santorum at 45 today or next week necessarily.
Right, like and, in front of the Washington.
Right, and also all the action is elsewhere, and that's the other piece of this is that, you know, we aren't living in an alternate universe. Spock doesn't have a beard, and you know the primary.
Take away one thing from this Tripcast, and Spock, no beard,
no beard,
and the primary is not going to be until May 29th at the earliest.
May 29th with a July. This is my favorite part of that. A July 31st runoff. It'll be 158 degrees.
Who's even going to be here?
Nobody. Five guys who all go to the same precinct meeting. Yeah. And they'll pick the next.
Should we say anything about the Strauss? If you're Speaker of the House, Joe Strauss, poll comes out, Santorum way ahead. No one in Texas cares that much about Romney. Is it a good idea to get out the next day and say, I'm for that guy?
I don't see any gain for him. And, you know, the people that are attacking Strauss and who have been attacking Strauss from the get-go are people who say this is a moderate Republican. He's not a conservative Republican. You're looking at all these numbers we're looking at. You're looking at the Constitution of the Texas House, and you're surrounded by conservative Republicans. There's no reason to underline it, I don't think. So he must just like Mitt Romney. I mean, you know, it doesn't make political sense.
All right, well, good. All right, we'll move on then. There's nothing to say.
But stay with this for one more second. What Strauss has done is basically given the people who don't like him.
Were you guys out of ammunition?
This is the MQSs of the world.
Suspicions confirmed.
Right.
You know.
See?
The people who publish, is that the right verb? Publish? Agenda-wise?
I don't know. If it's online, can you really publish it?
They seem to have sprained a finger, tripping over themselves to write quickly how angry they were that Strauss endorsed Romney and how aligned their perceived enemy in Strauss the moderate was with their perceived enemy and Romney the moderate. You know, the people who were inclined to dislike Strauss before are ever more inclined to dislike Strauss.
Right. Now. Right.
And so it feeds the narrative.
Speaking of the July or August runoffs, whenever they occur, does it look like there's going to be one in the U.S. Senate race here in Texas?
I don't know. I mean, you could...
Ted Cruz apparently thinks so. His campaign thinks so.
Well, the numbers on this thing are 38-27 Dewhurst over Cruz. The margin of error on that part of the poll is just Republican voters is 5.12%. You know, if you look at the margin and extrapolate from the don't knows to if this result holds, you could say that's a runoff, or you could say Dewhurst wins. I mean, it's just sort of within the margin. Could go either way.
But if you're the Cruz campaign, you take this as good news.
Sure, and this is, you know, for Cruz, this is good because the primaries are delayed, and so he has time to work, and he has relatively good numbers here with which to raise money and with which to work. I mean, he has, you know, yeah, this is good news for Cruz.
But all the campaigns are taking this as good news, at least in their press releases. Even Craig James came out and said that he was excited by this
poll. I
think
it was in the morning email from David Dewhurst.
It was not. But no, James did like a we're number three.
Right. We're tied for number three.
Right. Email. No, I agree. And look, if you're James and you started with zero and you got in late, you're thinking 7% doesn't look so bad. If you're Leppert and you got in a long time ago and you're struggling to be the alternative to Dewhurst, you're looking at that poll, if you believe it, and you're going 7%.
I got to say about this, when they start a campaign and when they start advertising and we start seeing TV, you know, I think that's when we'll really get a picture of the race.
Right.
I think you know, Leppert's got the money to advertise statewide. That could change his numbers. Dewhurst certainly has the money to bury everybody under television if he wants to. You know, that could change his numbers.
Right. The nauseating habit, honestly, of just, you know, sending out a million messages saying there's going to be a runoff or, you know, I'm Craig James and I'm doing great is just, you know, ridiculous. I mean, it's just...
My poll, it's a scientific instrument. It shouldn't be used for illicit purposes.
No,
I understand
people are going to do that, but I mean, to sit here and think of, you know, that we're going to sit here in February and go, oh, there's going to be a runoff at the end of May, or there's not going to be a runoff at the end of May. I mean...
Well, I don't know that there will be runoffs in this race. I do know there will be runoffs.
We just have
not
no
necessarily in this race.
So what do we just you, have no idea about what's going to happen in
so
this race.
So what do
race.
You get I out mean, of the poll then? Why do the poll?
Well, what you get out of it is you do get a sense of movement, right? So if you take this and you put it in the context of the two public policy polls before this, what you do see is that Cruz has, I think, achieved some of what they wanted. He's broken out of the pack.
Right.
But he's not actually closing the gap with Dewhurst. They're sort of moving at the same rate.
He closed it by 1 point. He was at 12 down. He's 11 down.
That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is the October poll had a bigger undecided, and Dewhurst was leading 2-1. Now Dewhurst is leading 3-2.
And who picked up, other than Dewhurst, who picked up steam was Cruz.
Well, a couple things about that. I mean, the fall poll had a bigger undecided, but we also pushed undecideds on this. Now, the undecideds we pushed were smaller, but I mean, to answer your question, Reeve, I mean, you know, one snapshot doesn't give you that much, frankly. You know, I mean, I think you have to put it in the context of, you know, a stream of data and a time series, and that's what we're doing. Right?
The Cruz campaign, according to the candidate, is to get David Dewhurst into a runoff where he thinks that there are more Cruz kind of voters than there are Dewhurst kind of voters. And if he could just get if he combined with James and Leppert and Lila Pittenger and everybody else can keep Dewhurst under 50% in May, that's Cruz's business plan here. He wants to push this to a runoff. He doesn't think he's going to win this thing outright.
Well, right. I mean, I would say that I think part of what helps Cruz on election day, primary day, not so much runoff day, is if there is a Santorum groundswell in Texas, as the poll suggests. I mean, I think that those sort of voters are apt to be Cruz voters. You know, despite the fact that I saw the other day in Houston and wanted to take a picture of it, a Romney Cruz car with a Romney sticker and a Cruz sticker, and I thought, who's that guy?
Well, that's the other thing.
It's the Santorum uptick helps Cruz.
Well, it shows up in the other polls too. I mean, when we did the race for lieutenant governor.
There's Dan Patrick.
Here's Dan
at 20%.
Patrick.
Right,
exactly.
That's the Cruz Santorum wing of that party, right?
Right.
Well, that's the broader narrative here, and that's another thing that you do find out from doing this is, you know, are there clumps of opinion? Are there clumps out there in the public that are kind of hanging together? And clearly, in this, if you look at You know, those numbers, you look at the numbers for Cruz, you look at the numbers for Santorum, you look at the numbers as tentative as they are for Dan Patrick in that race, and then you start looking at who those people are, and I've just started kind of doing this now. There's some coherence to that. There are little sort of patches of support among people who identify as extremely conservative, people who don't think that the Tea Party has had enough influence in the Republican Party, and people that identify with the Tea Parties. And those are overlapping but not identical measures, but they all seem to be places that are hanging together and have sets of preferences that look coherent.
Is there a reason it's so much more pronounced in the presidential race than the other races? I mean, those candidates in the lieutenant governor poll and the Senate poll, they're doing well and maybe better than expectations, but they're not the best out and out front runner like Santorum is.
The presidentials are by far the best defined candidates. Those are the candidates whose positions you know. I mean, people look at those and they may know who Dan Patrick is, but they look at the other race and they certainly know who Rick Santorum is, like him or not. I mean, he's been out there debating and talking, and you know what he's doing.
Right. It's the highest visibility race, and that's the other thing about this. You know, we're going to have a runoff for sure. Problem is that, you know, people were not paying attention to that Senate race until Perry got out of the presidential race.
That's true.
They just weren't.
It was around the same time I got off that cruise boat.
Right.
Yeah. And it's just been dogging him ever since.
Right. Yeah. If you're lucky, Richard Thompson will get in the race. Yeah.
Wrong. We're talking about Ted Cruz, Reeve. Come on. Not your Cruz. Ted Cruz.
Right. That was a fake Cruz.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I mean, the other race that we're going to be talking about is the governor's race for 2014. We're just not happy with
the 2012
elections.
About, you're not going to talk about the Democratic Senate race?
Oh, the Democratic Senate race is, you know, the winner is...
It's a guy who looks young enough to be Reeve's son who's
well,
in the first
yeah, and
place.
Well, it's a cluster, yeah. Sean Hubbard is, I checked this out, is 30 years old. So he's exactly...
A cluster of what?
It's one of your clumps. Okay. He's exactly 30 years old, which is the minimum age for a United States senator. He looks really young on his website. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh, my God.
But that's not a good sentence.
He looks younger than Reeve. It's unbelievable.
No, you need to look at his official website, not Craigslist.
Ross and I did agree to talk about this. He looks too young to be holding public office.
Daniel Boone.
Are you surprised that Daniel Boone doesn't have better name ID?
These guys, this is a clump. Sean Hubbard, Danielle Allen, Paul Sadler, and Daniel Boone are all... at 10% and 12%.
They're not household names necessarily.
They're not household names. The I don't know vote in that race is 55. It's not on the radar. It's just they were picking the name they liked best.
But is this one of those things where it will be on the radar eventually, or it will just never be on the radar?
That's up to the candidates. I mean, if Paul Sadler can raise, he seems to be the guy on this list with the most likelihood of raising money for a race. And does he raise enough money to become part of public consciousness? I don't know. He's got a lot of time. I mean, if you can raise your head up just a little bit and get out of the primary, then it's, you know, you and Dewhurst. I don't know.
You can get the same 42% as everybody who's been in that hot seat before.
Yeah, if he's going to be the guy that breaks this long Democratic record of losing statewide races, he hasn't shown it yet. But that doesn't mean he can't. It just, you know, he hadn't shown it yet.
Well, we already talked about the...
So I tried to seg to the governor's race. Do you want to do that?
Oh, you want to do the governor's race?
Yeah, 2014.
Well, because we actually did pull the lieutenant governor's race. We talked about it. We talked about it enough, you think? Susan comes on top, followed by Dan Patrick. We did that. It's your poll, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can say that basically we're pretty far out from that race. I mean,
okay. It might not even happen.
What's significant, I mean, you know, it's significant that Patrick is getting that much attention, but I mean, he and Combs are the two most well-known people in that race. They're well-known in different ways. Combs is known as statewide official. Patrick has a radio show in one of the largest urban areas, plus is pretty good at getting free media coverage.
They were the top two in October.
All right, well, let's talk
including
about
this podcast, you know, right? Apparently.
Yeah, I mean, I would also say that if we look at that closely, I think what we'll find, and I've only looked at this a little, is that Patrick is getting a lot of attention from people that are very engaged and follow closely. So
Dan Branch, our introer, is on there at 3%.
Right.
It's very hard to run as a House member for a statewide office.
Well, and again, I mean, the race is way out there, and
it's hard to run as a senator for a statewide office.
But let's not dwell on this. Can we talk about the governor's race a little bit?
What's that? The governor's race? So we asked people.
But let me just say one more thing. But hold on, don't move on.
This is great.
Patrick as a live possibility for the lieutenant governor race in 2014 does things to the calculation of what happens in the Senate over the next 2 years. Don't you think? It really does.
Yeah, the Senate's going to, if assuming Dewhurst wins or quits, the Senate has to pick from its own ranks the next lieutenant governor. Patrick's a player in that, certainly with the conservatives in the Senate. And if he's running for lieutenant governor, that's an issue one way, because that amounts to the senator saying, well, wait a minute, am I going to endorse a lieutenant governor's race here? If he decides not to, that could change it another way. I mean, I'm going to stay here in the Senate, and I want to be here to influence this race. I mean, you know, I think he's the leader of one of the clumps in the Senate.
Will it have any effect on what Rick Perry decides to do?
No.
Well, what does the poll say about that?
Well, Perry's in this mode right now of, you know, saying I might run for president in 2016, I might run for governor in 2014, and I think a lot of that has to do with I'm not a lame duck. Don't throw me out yet. So we asked people what the likelihood was that they would vote for Perry in 2014. And it's split, but it's not split in intensity. So 51% say they're unlikely to vote for him, and 39% say they are likely to. What's interesting to me is the very likely to vote for him for re-election is 21%. Very unlikely is 42%. So 2-1.
There's the Democratic base vote right there.
Well, right. But, right. You know.
Well, plus a few, you know, there's probably a few unhappy Republicans and independents in that even.
And then if you kind of do the referendum on the presidential run and say, well, you know, did he help or hurt the state? 6% think he helped Texas's image. So there's that.
I wonder what they thought the image was before.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. What were they worried about? 55% said he hurt Texas.
I didn't know
image.
We pulled Griff Perry. Right. That's what I was thinking.
55% hurt Texas image. 30% had no effect. And those are up from much lower numbers that I don't have right now.
Well, I mean, actually, the I don't know is about the same as October.
The in October, 19% thought he helped the state's image.
Right.
Only 37% thought he hurt the state's image. And the had no effect was about the same, about 30%.
Right. So, you know, basically the movement was all from the people that, you know, were, you know.
The forehead slap heard around, across the state.
People just didn't, yeah. I think you're right. As a judgment of how the presidential campaign went, I think there's not much, you know, there's not much surprise here that people don't think it went very well.
Let's say what we know to be true. We know that the governor of Texas cannot say I am not running, going into a legislative session and make himself into a lame duck, and therefore make himself less than as powerful as he needs to be. So of course he's not going to say I'm not running. That's not to say that he isn't going to run. But if he were not going to run, he wouldn't tell us now.
So this could be the inverse of the presidential run.
Well,
where he said, no, yes.
I believe Greg Abbott will not be deterred. Now, Greg Abbott, we'll talk about it, the strengths and weaknesses of Abbott as a candidate separately if you want. But I think Greg Abbott intends to run for governor this time, regardless of who else is in the race.
Well, I don't think Perry running around saying I'm going to run for governor in 2014 is necessarily going to cause Greg Abbott any pain. I don't think Abbott thinks that's true. I think everybody recognizes what Perry's trying to do, which is I'm not a lame duck. And I think they're all looking at the same numbers. You know, Greg Abbott, one of those numbers that we haven't mentioned is Greg Abbott has $12 million in the bank and has been sort of laying the groundwork for a gubernatorial run for some time now. I mean, if you construct this so that Perry's not in the race, almost no other Republican that I've heard of has said, I'm thinking about running for governor against Greg Abbott. The one that gets mentioned from time to time is Ed Emmett, the Harris County judge. But I don't know that he would run against a $12 million attorney general.
No one will get in a race against Greg Abbott, because the only way you defeat somebody like Abbott in a race like that is if you can get to his right. Ain't nobody getting to Greg Abbott's right. I mean, I can see no case to be made for anybody getting in the race against Abbott. Abbott is a very popular statewide elected official with high name ID and a huge bank account, and he has been patient.
Yeah.
And so in the absence of Rick Perry, or maybe in the presence of Rick Perry, Abbott's going to be the one in that race. I feel confident.
And he's by the time that this race comes around, he'll be well-practiced at sort of, you know, rabble-rousing on the right via Twitter, which is one of his favorite daily activities.
He's pretty good at that now, I'll tell you what. Yeah. Energetic at it.
We'll know about every lawsuit that the attorney general lost during his term. I mean, you know, there's a bunch of stuff like that, but I don't know that anybody on the Republican side will run.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like anyone's going to have the will. I mean, I think the only real question is does Perry run against him or not? And, you know, the point Evan makes, I was sort of, you know, grousing about before we started, which is, you know, Rick Perry saying that, you know, he's leaning towards running is the least newsworthy thing in Texas right now.
Yeah, but, you know, every time he has said that and everybody has said, nah,
wait till we get to the viewer mail.
Kay Hutchison said, nah, he won't actually do that, you know. I think Carol Strayhorn at one point said, nah, he won't actually do that.
And we've talked about that. He can now bank on that.
All the presidential candidates said, nah, he's not going to run for president. You know, here he is again.
And if we go back, you know, and to go back to the poll for just a beat, I mean, if you look at Perry through the frame of his approval numbers in the state, his personal approval and his job approval, he's on the low end in this poll of where he's been in the job approval in the mid-30s.
Right.
But he's not, you know, I mean, that's not news either, right? That's just, he fluctuates from low to high. And, you know, he was in that range before he really kind of took off and started talking about seceding and the Tea Party and the 10th Amendment in 2009. So he's been here before. And I think, you know, right now it doesn't really, frankly, it doesn't matter.
Was there anything in the poll that most surprised you or seemed out of step with what you would have expected?
Oh, you know, I thought the magnitude of the Santorum lead was a little bit surprising.
Right. 2.5 times the next highest finisher.
You know, I think Gingrich's weakness.
Yeah, Gingrich just fell through the floor.
Is actually pretty interesting,
right. But still ahead of Romney.
You know, but not very much. Not very much. I mean, he and Romney are essentially in about the same band down there. The other thing that there's a couple things issue wise that we're not going to roll out till Thursday. So
Right.
We'll turn that into a teaser, but there are some very provocative things coming on Thursday.
Is the Tea Party stuff coming out on Wednesday or Thursday?
The Tea Party stuff's coming out on Wednesday, and the numbers there, you know, we still have this trend where you find that if you ask people, would you vote for a Republican or a Democrat, you get a set of numbers, and then if you add the Tea Party as an actual party, the numbers come one for one out of the Republican Party. So if you just ask the two-party question, it's 44% Republican, 36% Democrat. The three-party question is 37% Democrat, a point different, 16% Republican and 22% Tea Party. So you see the two-party Republicans there.
Right. To me, the headline there is two things. One, the Tea Party thing is stabilized. That number at about 22 has been the same now for a little bit. And then the other thing is we have another item that says, do you think the Tea Party has too much, not enough, or too much, too little, or about the right amount of influence, or do you not know? The too much was at 30, too little at 29, the right amount at about 18. That's not too different from where we were. And the too little becomes a nice little gauge of, you know, this kind of conservative, you know, it's another good little conservative indicator out right there of kind of thinking about what people think.
It's the Goldilocks question.
It looks like if Paul Seidler wants to have any hope of any of those candidates in the Democratic side of the poll, any hope at all that what they should be doing is organizing the Tea Party into a real party.
Well, you should be organizing. Well, I don't think so. I think the Tea Party is going to be the right wing of the Republican Party. I think they need to organize
the
moderates.
Like, splits the vote there?
But the item is not. I mean, but it's a hypothetical. I mean, it's not meant to say, we don't say, do you think they should form a party. I think we'd actually not get a very high response
right
to that.
Right.
We set it up as a hypothetical just to get people's effective response.
The Saddlers have to get the independents and the moderates who they hope have become unhappy with the Republican Party. The Republican Party's gone too far right. I'm going to peel off. And it's sort of, you know, that's sort of their memory of what happened to the Democrats. The Democrats were in that position where the moderates said, this party's too liberal, I'm peeling off. And those people are all Republicans now.
Yeah, but I would, you know, we can talk about what Paul Saddler might or might not do. I mean, one of the striking things about the underlying fundamentals of this is that for all the thrashing around we've seen in Texas politics in the last 6 or 8 months, you know, a fairly contentious legislative session with big social cuts, big cuts in social spending, you know, a bunch of unrest predicted over education, Rick Perry getting in the presidential race and theoretically giving people an opportunity to rally around a favorite son, the flame out of the Perry campaign, and now this extended unrest and lack of determinacy in elections. For all that, the underlying fundamentals of Texas public opinion are not very different than they've been for the last couple of years.
Yeah, another way to say that is all the weaknesses in the Republican Party accrue to the benefit of other Republicans, not to the Democrats. I mean, the holes in the wall, you know, this group of Republicans can beat that group of Republicans, but there's no real observation you can make from outside right now that says, you know, if the Democrats do that, there's an opening there. I don't know what that opening
is. In a way, that goes back to, you know, how about organizing the Tea Party? I mean, what happened is that rather than the Tea Party phenomena, you know, sort of splitting the Republican Party, they absorbed it and it's moving the party to the right.
All right. Well, very quickly, since this is what the editor-in-chief wanted, so some questions from the audience. You can just answer these as quickly as you want.
Is this like a speed round?
So we said, yeah, what do you want to hear about? Wrote in, how about a little coverage of the President's Day Veterans for Ron Paul March that took place in Washington at the White House?
Okay, we just gave it to him.
What do you think?
You just did it.
Okay. Someone else wanted to know about the assassination of Burroughs in West Texas. Jim?
James S. Burroughs, who produced the Rhoda? Is that the TV producer? Who are you referring to? What Burroughs?
It's an animal, four-legged
oh,
animal.
Oh, Burroughs, like B-U-R-R-O-S.
Yeah.
What the hell's he talking about?
Oh, the Buddha. Gotcha.
William,
I don't use
William
accents.
S. Burroughs?
Who got assassinated? What happened?
What the hell's he talking about?
All right. Okay. No, with all due respect to the listener, I have no knowledge
to Reeve,
of that.
The word assassinate was the problem there.
I didn't write it. Brokered GOP convention with Bush family consigliere James Baker coming to the rescue with Jeb Bush.
Oh, anything with consigliere and it is just a TV plot.
Oh, we can actually do something about that, right? I mean, brokered convention right now is, you know, fantasy of professional journalists and inside junkies.
I don't, you know, there's
always
this brokered
It could possibly happen, but,
it's not
you know,
happen.
It's not.
All right. There was one more, but I don't think I'm going to read it.
Well, oh, come on, read it.
It was a tweet from a fake Michael Berry Twitter account.
Let's hear it.
No, then you definitely shouldn't read it. Why don't you back the podcast up and ram into its end for 70 miles an hour? Come on.
It wants to know if anywhere a guy can go for a late night fashion show that doesn't charge $12 drinks.
You read the fake Michael Berry question? I didn't think this podcast would descend into the depths any further.
Move to San Marcos. That would be my answer to that.
You're gonna have to Google some of that for the context. But in the meantime, on behalf of Evan, Ross, Jim, and our producer Todd, this is Reeve. Thanks for listening.
Give me the 30-second no verbs like Tonto is telling me the story take on how it was.